This is really good.
I'm digging it. So what'd you put in
this?
How
did you put
asparagus? Did shaved asparagus?
Uh-huh. It's just usually
like the color. Does that mean it was hairy before you started?
Yeah. Oh, hello, everybody.
And what is clotted cream?
I'll tell you in a minute.
Right. You're listening to KVSH LP.
Vashon. We're at the JBBS studio in the heart of the village, Vashon, Washington. You're listening to KVSH 101.9. You're listening to The Clatch.
Boom.
That's the name of our show.
Yes.
My name is Linda Nygaard, and I'll be your host today. I have a couple of other hosts
Queen
here. Queen consorts. Yes, that's what you are today. Heidi Skrypek. Hi, Heidi.
Hi.
Hello. And Susan McCabe.
Hello.
And together, the three of us sort of formed this idea last winter during COVID that we wanted to have some Zoom coffees. And then we decided, well, why don't we have a radio show that is focused on things that matter to us, things we want to talk about, and maybe you'd be interested in as well? So that's just a little review for people who are first-time listeners.
Hence the clash.
I'm sorry?
Hence the clatch.
Coffee clatch, except we're with a K.
Yeah. Actually, so, coffee clatch is with a K.
Is it with
it's
a K
a
in
German?
German
word, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Coffee clatch.
Okay.
And it's a little late for some of us.
I guess I was
coffee,
thinking.
But, you know.
I was thinking about clutch.
Oh, clutch.
Starts with
coffee
a C.
Clutch.
Coffee clutch.
Clash.
Yeah.
That would be a different thing.
Well, you know, one thing's for sure. We all have stories.
Mm-hmm.
And we all like to hear stories. So the first thing I'd like to talk about today is the Queen. Just a little nod to the Queen. I really loved the Queen. I have mixed emotions about the monarchy itself. There's a lot of money there that I'm sure people could use in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved the Queen, and my grandmother was British Columbian, Canadian, and she was a big fan of the Queen. So every time I went to visit her, which was, you know, 2-3 times a year, I got education about the Queen. And she had all kinds of plates and, you know, commemorative memorabilia about the Queen. And in 1977, she sent me a China cup, which I'm using today for our tea.
Yay.
That was in honor of the Queen's 25th anniversary of being large and in charge.
Her largesse.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And so today we're having some scones and some clotted cream and strawberry jam and honey's famous Heidi.
Woo!
Heidi's famous honey.
Thank you, bees.
And it's pretty tasty. So here's to the Queen.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers
to the queen.
Yeah.
You know what I've been thinking about lately? I've been thinking about ancestors, like my ancestors and your ancestors, everybody's ancestors, and the way our ancestors left things for us, either good or bad things, you know, in the way that they treated the world and each other and that kind of thing. And someone somewhere last week posed a question that I have to answer, and I'm still thinking about it, but her question was, are you being a good ancestor?
Hmm.
How and what is a good ancestor? You know, we could talk about that ancestor in a environmental way, in a familial way. I don't know. What do you think about that?
In a sociocultural way?
Yeah, yeah.
To my mind, of course, I am an environmental fanatic.
Right.
We've not been good ancestors for the planet and for all those critters, including humans, who we hope we'll continue to live on it. At the rate we're going, that's a question mark. But yeah, I think we could do a lot better as
environmental
speaking. Ancestors.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The legacy that we leave is so critical. And I think now that we're in the red, basically,
mm-hmm.
maybe beyond the red,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
every action, every intervention, it's so important.
I guess I think about that, you know, with regard to our charge as someone's ancestors, the most important thing to me is the environment, because we're leaving behind a burning planet for our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. I also have, like you were talking about, the sociocultural aspects of that and raising children who are good people who can then pass that on to their children. I think that's You know, one of the things I'm proudest of is having raised two really wonderful boys who are now men, and they know how to be with women. And so I sort of think that's kind of a legacy, you know, as far as ancestors go. And then just clean up your place. Clean up your corner, people. And then you're a better ancestor.
Well, I like the idea of saying, let's leave it better than we found it.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I'm speaking of the planet, but perhaps also our culture.
Yeah.
Let's leave it better than we found it. Of course, what constitutes better is debatable. We are melting pot of different ideas
right.
of what is actually good and right. And that is the grand experiment that is the United States.
Mm-hmm. Politically, for sure. Talking about the environment, excuse me, and ancestors. This has nothing to do with ancestors. It has to do with what's going on currently. I have to rant for a minute about leaf blowers. I don't know. I don't know if y'all use leaf blowers or not, but they are the bane of my existence. And I hear them, and I get pricklies on my neck when I hear them. And so I started doing a little research on leaf blowers and just exactly what they are. Do you know that there are no regulations? They're two-stroke gas engines, and there are no regulations with regard to emissions.
I know.
None. And so Edmunds Research, who does research about cars and emissions and what's the good and what's the bad, says that the hydrocarbon emissions from a half hour of yard work with the two-stroke leaf blower are about the same as a 3,900-mile drive from Texas to Alaska in a Ford Raptor.
What?
And as ridiculous as it sounds, you should ditch your yard equipment. Really, that's true. And I got that verified in several other statistics.
That's
so
massive.
It's,
and you know,
massive.
All that lawn equipment is available electronically. It does electrically.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, that's the other
thing.
It
doesn't have to be gas powered.
No, it doesn't. And many, many places across the United States have already made them illegal. You know, you cannot use them. Gavin Newsom's doing some really incredible stuff in California.
Yeah.
The noise pollution, that's another sticky wicket for me. Sounds above 85 decibels can permanently harm hearing. And anything above 70 is considered dangerous. And the measurement at a 50-foot distance with a leaf blower is 64 to 78 decibels. So we're in the danger zone.
Mm-hmm.
And why are we so afraid of leaves?
I don't know.
It's like the mow and blow.
Yeah, really.
Let me tell you this. How about dogs? Above 85 decibels, you start playing with auditory fire. Inside the inner ear, irreparable damage happens to the dogs because they hear so well. And your dog's inner ear works exactly the same way yours does, but it has a wider range of frequency.
Oh, interesting.
So if it's loud to you, it's killing your dogs.
Oh, no.
And then, you know what else? Even when they're not in use, they're causing damage because you have to change the oil filters. And there's a contaminated air filter, fuel filters, that kind of thing. And the other thing that just killed me that I found out, do you know what fugitive dust is? Ever heard that term?
I think it's in my bathroom. Always.
Okay, so fugitive dust is it's what's left behind after the dust cloud passes. There's still stuff in the air. And that stuff in the air is silicon oxides, aluminum oxides, calcium carbonates, iron, and like other sources like vehicle exhaust or smokestacks and that kind of stuff, those have them too. But leaf blowers have twice as much as an electric would.
Can you tell me the name of the dust again?
Fugitive dust.
Fugitive
runaway dust.
Yeah. Got
it. It's runaway dust. Yeah. Dust. And, you know, the alternatives. Oh, God. I forgot to tell you this. So if you start looking up leaf blower information on YouTube, there are a billion videos out there of men bragging about the size of their leaf blower. I kid you not. And they are. And there's
one. It's too easy. It's too easy.
I didn't watch. Leave it alone.
Does a bigger blower blow more?
Is that a leaf blower in your truck, or you just happen to see me?
Right. Oh, is that a leaf blower in your truck?
Exactly.
funny. Okay, so now all the rage with these guys that love their leaf blowers is a riding leaf blower. And there's a 20-minute video of this guy bragging about his riding leaf blower. And I didn't watch the whole thing, obviously, but all it is him riding around his yard saying, look at that big pile of leaves over there. I'm going to blow the you-know-what out of it.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's like this macho kind of thing.
Bravado. Wow.
I know that in Vashon, on Vashon, we are very environmentally aware.
Yes.
And I'm hoping that somehow we can start a movement to get rid of them. I don't know what that would take because we're unincorporated.
I think we have a protest at the four-way stop sign with signs that say ban the leaf blowers no matter how big they are. Or we get one really big leaf blower and blow the whole town and say it's
well,
over.
Well, that's something to think about. You know, there all are alternatives. Do you know what leaf sweepers are? They're these big, like a big tub that's on wheels with like a combine thing. What do you call rotary blade?
That's cool.
And you just push it and
like
it puts
a mulcher? Is it mulch?
No, it doesn't mulch them. It just picks up the leaves. It's
like a
traveling rake. And they're not very expensive. The other thing is,
how are they powered?
By man. You push it like a push lawnmower.
Oh, Flintstone style, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's powered by man and woman.
I love it. I love it.
And then people gripe about, it's too expensive. You know, gas power ones aren't as strong and they're too expensive. The truth is that it costs less to keep an electric leaf blower than it does to keep a gas leaf blower.
Oh, I would think so.
Yeah. One more thing I wanted to tell you is, you know, sometimes people have a hard time, like they want to talk to their yard guys about maybe not using the leaf blower, and it can be a pretty contentious situation because they're fast and they like those, and you know, but I've seen people chase five leaves for 5 minutes
and
I can't stand it. They want to get every last leaf. And environmentally speaking, those leaves are protecting insects and microbes and all kinds of things that grow under the leaves in the wintertime.
Right. They mulch the grass.
They mulch the grass.
If you leave them there or if you mulch them with your lawnmower, they will enrich your lawn.
Yeah.
Where are they going anyway? Like, you're blowing a leaf, so are you going and casting them into your neighbor's yard?
Well, or in a ravine somewhere. They put them in a pickup and go dump them in a ravine, you know? It's good for the ravine, probably.
But I don't probably get it.
Not so good for us.
Anyway,
I was talking with someone about it, and they said, well, you know, it's going to be really hard to get people to switch. And I said, yeah, I know it is. And he had a couple of ideas about how to approach your yard guys. And he said, you know, do it with respect. Do it with, I really appreciate the work you do, and I like the work you do. I have a big problem with the leaf blowers, and I'm pretty concerned about it. And then you can ask them questions. And, you know, they may or may not go with you, but the point the guy was making is be really nice and don't be, what's that leaf blower? I want to get rid of that. Don't do that. Be nice. So that's my rant, I guess.
Are you relieved?
Not yet.
Relieved?
Not yet.
Will there still be leaf blowers happening where you live?
Yes.
Well, that sucks for you.
Does suck.
It really sucks. It's really bad. But I'm working on it. I don't think we'll have them next year. We might have them still this fall, but I'm working pretty hard on
that. She's campaigning behind the scenes, ladies and gentlemen.
I am.
I mean, the other thing is that, like, the places where you buy those pieces of equipment, if they would cooperate and just allow you, you're never going to get them to boycott the sale of gas-powered leaf blowers, but you could have a did you know with what you opened
with. Oh, that's true.
A little sign.
The emissions.
That's a great idea. I'm going to the hardware store.
Or cash rebate incentives.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you get a 10% discount if you buy an electric leaf blower as opposed to a gas-powered blower.
Makes the hardware store a hero.
That's right.
It does. And that makes you a good ancestor.
Yes.
Way to wrap it up.
Yeah,
way to put
wrap
a bow
it up.
On it.
I put a bird on it.
That's right.
So we did leaf blowers, and I, you know, it's going to be, it's a thing of mine. So I finally found something to feel passionate about.
So we might be coming back to this. Is that what
we might? Okay. We'll see. We might. I want to tell you one more thing.
Yeah.
And it
yeah.
has nothing to do with that.
Nothing to do with leaf blowing?
No, nothing to do with that. It has to do with Kiev. Kiev. How do we say that?
I think it's Kiev.
Kiev. I think it's Kiev. Mm-hmm. But we've always said Kiev. And we used
have?
To, you know, like chicken Kiev. Kiev.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it's Kiev.
Which is the capital of Ukraine, in case people out there aren't aware.
So, Catherine the Great from Russia, I got this out of the Moscow Times, went to the Ukraine area when she was ruling and was introduced to something called dry jam. And dry jam, in our terms today, it's more like dried sweetened fruit. But there's a whole process that you go through that make the oranges and the apples and anything else you have look like jewels. It's a very long process to do it. You boil them and then you bake them and then you boil them again and you do all these things. It's like a 3 or 4 day process that you do. But anyway, she got so excited about dry jam that she went back to Russia and had her chef recreate the recipe, which he did. And I'll put that on the website, because right now we're in high fruit season for apples, and pretty soon oranges are going to come in. And I haven't made them yet, but I looked, and my gosh, they're just gorgeous. So I'd never heard of dry jam before, so I thought I'd tell you about that.
It sounds, and can you do it with peaches too?
Yeah, you can do it with anything you want.
Got a lot of peaches right now, but it does sound it seems like you kind of cook all the nutrition out of it.
Oh, probably. It's just, you know, there's
so
not
candy
much,
when you're done.
There's
yeah.
not much
yeah.
nutrition in jam, really. I mean, it's, you know, condiment. So, anyway, she was an amazing Catherine the Great. That's for sure. And it's just one little tidbit that I found today when I was, or yesterday when I was looking around. Also, did you know that America actually banned sliced bread during the war?
Why?
Speaking of jam and bread, because they felt like the metal that uses the that slices the bread was needed for the war.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And there, I don't know, there was something about quantity. It made it easier for them if they didn't have to slice the bread. I don't know. But the women went nuts and they couldn't stand it. They, you know, I mean, these are the women who resorted to, since they couldn't get any nylons, they drew with eye pencil that seam up the back of their legs. So it looked like they had nylons on, you know, they were sick of sacrificing. And this, I read an article about it, and these women were just having a fit because they were cutting themselves, and they made big fat slices and little skinny slices and nothing. And they couldn't make a sandwich. And then by the time you get the lunch ready, so we went back to sliced bread. And that's where that, I think that saying must have come from. Nothing better than or
what, sliced as, bread.
Nothing since as good as, I don't know.
The greatest thing since.
Since. Sliced thank sliced you,
bread.
Heidi.
That's the one.
Thank
it's a good
you,
one.
Heidi.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it does. you know, how do you guys talk to strangers?
Yes.
Do you?
All the time.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah,
mm,
I do
to.
Too. Tell me what that's like for you. Like, how does that work for you?
Start with a smile mm-hmm. and just quick small talk, and then you can mm-hmm. take a pulse on if they want to talk to you. So it's really that simple. And then go from there.
It is. And you can also say, oh, I noticed something about you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or I really compliment them. Oh, I really like that hat. Or I really, you've got beautiful hands or something like that.
Or I read that book, you know.
Exactly.
Common thread.
Yeah, common thread.
Right.
It's a good conversation.
Yeah, well, I love talking to strangers.
I do too. I talk to strangers all the time. And I think, you know, you can always tell when they're not interested and then you just don't, you know, but sometimes you strike up incredible conversations with people and learn something. I read an article in New York Times about how people on subways and buses talk to each other sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
But the point of the article was how good you can make somebody else feel. By just saying hello and acknowledging their presence.
Mm-hmm.
I think on Vashon, we always say hello.
And there's a actually the traditional Vashon wave, which is kind of a flip of the hand. Up.
It is. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. She did it really quick, guys. Yeah, she just kind of
flip your hand up.
She put her forearm.
It's all on the wrist.
Yeah, she just. It's literally from the wrist up. Goes yeah. fling up yeah. and then flip down.
That's
like
particularly done in cars. But
yeah. You know, that would be an interesting thing to do. Is research all the different hand signals around the world. Like we talked about Shaka. We talked about Shaka as yeah, good last right. week, and yeah. this week it's something that's interesting because there are signals in yeah. lots of different cultures. Yeah.
One exception to this is not online. Like, I do yeah, not, when no. I get those messages,
mm-hmm. oh, right.
those are trolls.
No,
and
I don't talk online.
Predators.
No.
Don't
so
talk to strangers
it's the
online.
In-person thing.
Yeah, right. it's eye right. contact. Yeah. And, you know, there have been studies that say how much small talk can enrich a person's life. You never know what that person is going through when you say, gosh, I like your shoes, or, oh, that's just a great, whatever, you know? And it makes them feel so much better.
Everybody's got a story.
Everybody does.
And it's so much fun to get a piece mm-hmm. of that just by mm-hmm. asking, just by saying hello. Recently, I was visiting in Santa Monica, and I walked every day about 13 blocks to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who were not on their phones were the homeless people.
Oh, yeah.
And they were always
wow.
open for a conversation.
Sure.
And I had some great conversations with homeless people.
Well, you met a man at wasn't there an old man or something at the top of the stairs that you had?
He wasn't an old man. He was, I would say, in his 30s.
Oh.
And he was holding a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And I was huffing and puffing up up a couple several levels of very steep stairs. And he was watching me, and I had stopped at a landing to take a breath, and he was really watching me with a look of concern. And I waved and said, I'm okay. Got to the top. Yeah. I'm okay. But I got up there, and we had a great conversation, and he was genuinely concerned about my well-being.
Aww.
Isn't that sweet?
It was wonderful.
Yeah. I had one the other day. I was outside, and there were two men standing under, there's a giant oak tree about half a block from where I live. And they were standing, I was walking past, they were standing under there looking up, talking about the acorns. And I said, what, are you arborists? And they said, oh no, we're looking at the acorns. Okay, so I won't tell you the whole conversation, but what came out of that conversation was that it's a man who lives on Vashon. And his son, who does not live here, he lives in Minnesota, and his son had just finished, his son was probably middle 30s, early 40s, somewhere in there, just finished walking the Pacific Coast Trail.
Oh, oh cool. I love that.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. And dad was so proud, and son was kind of tired, you know, but yeah. he was very proud of himself.
So you mean just finished?
Just.
Like
yesterday.
Right off the trail.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And then, so he came to Vashon to visit his dad before he went back to Minnesota.
Cool.
And come to find out, he likes acorns of all different kinds because he makes acorn flour.
Oh.
And he said, I don't know that these will work because I think this is a white oak, and these white oak has so much tannin compared to what they have in the Midwest and on the East Coast.
Huh.
And so he showed me, he peeled the acorn back, and he said, see this little thing in there? He said, you get that little thing, whatever he called it, and you put it in a pot and you boil it for a while, and then you take it out and you dry it, and then you boil it again, and then you grind it. And he said, I made pancakes out of acorn flour, and they were the best pancakes I ever had. So that was a whole conversation with people I'll probably never see again.
Right.
And it was really fun.
So cool.
Yeah.
You know, that makes me think of those, when you say people I'll never see again, conversations on airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into conversations on airplanes with people, you tell them things you don't tell your most intimate family members.
I don't.
And
I
vice
have.
Versa. I have.
I totally have.
And I've gotten some information from strangers, too, that I'll never see again, and that's great.
You know what? I don't talk on airplanes.
Oh.
Oh, you're one of those.
I don't talk, and please do not talk to me on the airplane. Just please don't.
Well, that's when you put your headphones on and people will leave
headphones
you
or a book or something. Yeah. But yeah. The book doesn't usually stop people.
But window seats often do, because you can literally just...
Mm-hmm. That's why I fly a window seat,
because
I can
do?
Turn my head yeah. and I can kind of turn my back on everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
I'm
that's what I do
person.
When I fly.
I'm an aisle person
See,
also.
I love that.
Because it's easier to get to the bathroom.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and it's time to
underwrite.
Oh, yeah, let's do that.
Woohoo, underwriters.
All right.
Can't do what we do on Voice of Vashon without our underwriters, like Snapdragon Bakery and Cafe. Pastries and vegetarian lunches by day and tasty sips and special events at night. Located on Vashon Highway on the south end of town. And don't miss the Wild Mermaid Cafe and store located at the North End Ferry. Visit VashonSnapdragon.com for up-to-date hours of operation.
Voice of Vashon thanks Dental Care of Vashon for its programming support. If you have tooth or gum discomfort, damaged or missing teeth, sleep issues, or need crowns or dental implants, Dr. Demova and her team will bring you relief in a comfortable, caring environment. Call them at 206-457-2744 and find them on the web at dentalcareofvashon.com.
Oh, before we do anything else, I want to do a plug here because we were talking about the Pacific Crest Trail.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff Hoyt has been following Bruce Morser and Bob Horsley as they are cycling across the Pacific Crest Trail.
That.
And they are great interviews. I think you can probably pick them up at voiceofvashon.org.
Mm-hmm.
But Jeff is, of course, a great interviewer. Mm-hmm. And these guys are fabulous. So
how
anyway,
fun.
It's amazing what they're doing.
Yes, it really is. Yeah.
Jeff's teasers, they hook you.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They do.
Like,
they really do.
It seemed
do.
Like he was seeing things because he was.
You are listening to The Voice of Vashon 101.9.
This is
The Clatch. You're on The Clatch. Hi. Well, we've been talking a little bit about food and a little bit about history and a little bit about, I don't know, everything.
Strangers.
Stranger danger. Yeah. I am really curious because Heidi and Susan have been working on how we can eat from the sea or what's harvesting is going on in the ocean right now and how our ocean is surviving. So I'm just going to turn it over to you two.
Well, yeah, I'm not really working on anything. I'm just aware of. And there are some folks here on Vashon who are getting permits to grow a kelp farm.
I know.
And kelp can be used... And Heidi, you can correct me here. For food and for stuff.
Skincare, like, supplements, moisturizers.
And I thought they'd make a great resource for things that are now used to as plastics.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Mm-hmm. And there's silicone that I think is being used to replace plastics, but I think kelp can be done as well.
Kind of like the bamboo thing.
Kind of, yeah, you know? Like bamboo replacing trees.
Yeah, yeah,
right. It's more, what am I trying to say, renewable
mm-hmm.
than plastic. Well, plastics are forever. not renewable, renewed, always there. Kelp has many uses. And Heidi, I think there are several other kinds of seaweed that have been discovered to be, in fact, I think Asian chefs use a lot of vegetables from the sea, like sea beans.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what was the other one that looks sea grapes?
They're sea cucumber.
Sea cucumber.
Sea cucumbers,
absolutely.
Yeah. That's also a kind of an eel, isn't it?
No, they're different.
Oh, like, are they?
Sea cucumber is an invertebrate, and the eel is an eel.
Oh, okay. See what I know.
But it's amazing. I mean, you've had sushi, so you've eaten nori,
mm-hmm.
if you've had the rolls.
Mm-hmm.
Even the nigiri has a strip of the nori around it.
And what is nori?
It's just a seaweed.
Yeah, okay.
And in Hawaii, a lot of the poke has seaweed. Mm-hmm. There's one that's a purple spiky version, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's ogo. It's a Japanese word, ogo. And it's red. And it looks like some of the stuff that we have out here in Puget Sound. Puget Sound is an estuary, and it's mm-hmm. a really vital ground for kelps and seaweeds. And there is a difference. And I will get to that.
Okay.
But there are so many. Sea lettuce is a big one that you see on the shallows here at Puget
Sound. Can we see it here?
Oh, yeah. It's really green.
Is it that sort of filmy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And
it's
you can
edible.
Eat that?
Mm-hmm. It's edible.
I had no idea.
And you can boil it a little mm-hmm. bit, you know, or blanch it, and just if you're worried about toxins, but it is mm-hmm. safe. And our Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife pamphlet, mm-hmm. every single year, you can harvest gobs and gobs of it without any sort of penalty. There's so much every day. I think it's like two big bags a day you can...
Really?
get out of the sea with anywhere, from pretty much anywhere. It's amazing. And the chickens love it. It's really good for them. You can put it on your plants for fertilizer, a natural fertilizer. It just breaks down naturally. It's the best.
Well, and if you cook it, you don't have to add salt.
You do not. There's plenty of salt and iodine in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm excited about the prospect of getting some edible seaweed. I don't know what the actual outcomes are supposed to be from this farm, but I'm thinking it's edibles.
Yeah, I thought it was just kelp. Maybe it's more.
Yeah.
And that would be great. Do you, as a regular swimmer in the Sound, mm-hmm. know where we can look for things like sea lettuce?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It's pretty much everywhere on the shores.
So get out there and snorkel and harvest it. Oh, that'd be so fun.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Not only that, we have not fun seaweeds also. I don't know why I'm blanking right now, but there's some wonderful sugar-based kelps, like in the kelp forest right off of Calvos Passage on the side that faces Manchester. That whole side has a really wonderful kelp bed of a sugar-based type, which is also edible. It's brown, so this like bull kelp.
Yes, right.
You know, so they have this big base and this long cord, and then
The bulb at the end.
Yeah, the bulb is at the very base, anchored into rocks and things like that. And then at the very end is just a wisp of a leaf, you know, sort of.
Oh, and it's beautiful if you are skin diving or perhaps even snorkeling to go through those kelp forests. It's magical.
I bet it is.
Transformative.
It is.
You're like on another planet.
Yes, yes.
So we pursue that stuff. We'll go and like, oh, the tide is favorable. We're going to go check it out. And so it is otherworldly, but it's also, there are components that could feed the world. I'm really excited about the potential it has to feed us, because all the billionaires are buying up farmland, terra firma.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason we're overpopulating.
Right.
Right. Right.
They're going to have the market on food.
Well, you know what NASA's doing right now? NASA is studying what it would be like to send kelp and seaweed and live with the astronauts into space, because they feel so much better when they eat fresh vegetables, and they're trying to figure out how they can do this and have it regenerative. They can garden with sea. I have no idea about the technicalities of it, but
yeah, that's after we've destroyed this planet and they go to another.
Well, you know, there is that.
So while we're on this topic, I want you, if you like Instagram and are using Instagram, go find Black Forager. She is this kooky, nerdy Miss Frizzle of the Black Kingdom. She's phenomenal. Her name is Alexis Nicole. And Black Forager, she is a total nerd when she talks, but she does things on land and in the water and in lakes, oceans. And she will show you how to make the kookiest things. And she's just hilarious. She was looking at a purple mushroom yesterday and remarked how phallic it was. She's much crasser about it than I was just then. But she's really good at those kind of resources, and it's nice to see a person of color preaching this.
Right, right.
So check it out.
Well, so you mentioned sea grapes. Do you know anything about them? I mean, have you had a sea grape?
No, I haven't. Have you?
No, me neither.
They look a little like caviar.
They look like caviar, and they're real briny. I have never tasted one, but I read about them a lot. They're real briny, so that is reminiscent as well of the caviar.
Yeah, right.
And there's a little pop, little crunch, just like the caviar has.
Oh. Really quick, just in real time, I'm flinging a book in Linda's face right now, because I have this really cool book about Pacific seaweeds, and it is a wonderful color text with lots of color photography. And at the very back, Linda's department, recipes of all the things you can do with seaweeds. And if you thumb through it, there are some crazy, there's one for blancmange using pieces of seaweed. Just shout out a few recipes.
Well, how about you just sprinkle some on your brownies?
Boom.
That's what they're talking about.
Kind of brownies?
And you can make kelp flakes.
Boom.
Sesame kelp crackers.
Yes.
I love that. Cold salad. I don't know what that word is. I can't say that. And seaweed kimchi.
See, that sounds easy.
Think about that. Sea vegetable stock.
Now you're talking. See, for all the vegetarians and the vegans out there.
Really?
Okay, so Nereo, N-E-R-E-O soup. Takes a little time to prepare, but it's a hearty lunch. Bull kelp.
There it is. That's what we have.
Vegetable stock, tofu, broccoli, soy sauce, an egg.
That's it.
And two green onions. That's it.
And you're living. That sounds easy.
That sounds wonderful.
Sounds really wonderful. Oh, my God. Kelp egg noodles.
See?
I might have to take it away from her. We're becoming a cooking show again.
I know. Oh, dear. Sorry.
I have a problem with that sometimes. As long as I get to eat.
Yeah, right. I know. We didn't talk about food today. We're eating scones. Did we already talk about that?
A little bit.
I think we did. A little bit at the end.
Okay.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
That was our toast to the queen.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. I have a good memory. It's just short.
We'd like it to last for the entire show.
Okay. I'll try. I'll try harder. Any more news?
Delicious. No, now I'm just thinking about your scones. You've ruined me.
Oh, really? Good. Yeah. I read an article yesterday that the Dutch are harvesting seaweed way offshore. Way offshore. Hmm. And their idea is that they want to compete with China and Japan in that market because there's a huge market for seaweed.
Well, isn't that what you just brought up?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so the Dutch are doing this. And now there are two sides to that story. You know, the one side is, isn't this wonderful because we're using the oceans, we're, you know, feeding, it's natural, it's organic, it's all of this stuff, and it's wonderful. On the other side of the coin is the machinery that it takes and the disruption that it causes in the ocean and the other fish and that, you know, okay, so we got it all off the shore, I guess we'll just go farther and take more from out there. You know?
Yeah, the industrial harvesting of it, I'd have to see what
I would
it is,
too.
Yeah. Like in boutique, you know, go out on a rowboat and
Well, that's
it
a little
up.
Different. Right. Yeah, you can do that. Yeah. But these are like big machines. It's a big, sizable industrial.
And yeah, so what sort of impact does that have on the food source for?
I would think
how many sea creatures feed on that stuff? And are we then competing with them?
However, I have faith in the Dutch. You know, they're very environmentally conscious.
They are.
They know what they're doing. So maybe...
Wind power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Irrigation.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to hand the innovation over to them. Yeah,
I know.
This is good. No, that's a good point. But we also, I'm sure there's another side benefit to that, and that's just less dependence on Asia. More food sovereignty, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
And I suspect seaweed has something to do with GDP, you know, in China and Japan.
Sure.
So, got anything else?
On that topic? No.
Okay. No. Well, we decided...
I'm getting hungry.
Are you? It's almost time for something. You know, there's been a lot going on in the news lately. We touched a little bit last time on abortion, and we were both all, do you want to talk about this later? Oh, okay, wait. I'm getting signals.
I do want to talk about this, but I think we're going to take a break. We're going to go deep, so before we do that, let's just hear another moment from our fabulous
underwriter. Yeah, let's do that. Thanks, Heidi.
Sure.
This portion of VOV programming comes to you with support from Vashon Center for the Arts. VCA provides quality arts experiences for all ages and creates opportunities for artists to perform and exhibit their work. Find out what's happening at VashonCenterForTheArts.org.
VOV programming support is provided by Island Spring Organics. 40-plus years of organic, non-GMO soy foods made daily right here on Vashon. Tours are available. Find them on the web at islandspringorganics.com.
All right, Island Spring, thank you. Tofu.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have regrouped a little bit. We're back live.
Boom.
You're listening to The Clatch 101.9. Vashon.
KVSH.
KVSH, yes.
Your island connection.
Thanks for making us part of your day.
Shall we go on?
We can't do it without you.
Are you listening?
You can donate at voiceofvashon.org.
Yes, please. We need money. Send money.
Community-supported radio rocks.
So anyway, last week we touched on the issue of abortion that every woman I know is up in arms about it, and many of the men. I haven't talked to a lot of men, but some of them are. And I just want to talk about that. I want to explore what is that going to do to us, and how does that affect our daily lives as women, for me, it makes me feel like a second-class citizen, even though I'm never going to have an abortion. I'm not having any more babies, you know? But it makes it was such a slap to a woman's autonomy, period.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. One of the things that continues to grate on me around this whole issue is the idea that women's bodies and women's lives are under the control of the men who make the laws. Mm-hmm. We don't have any laws that govern men's bodies.
No.
Who the hell are they to say that they can run women's lives? Mm-hmm. And what that, it's just another reflection of the misogyny that is so deeply ingrained in our culture, mm-hmm. that women participate in as well. Some women participate in.
Oh, yeah.
As well as men, mm-hmm. because that's how they get their power, is sticking with the men. It is deeply horrifying to me, especially when I think, Linda, you brought that article to us about abortion abolitionists who want to make women punishable for murder when they have an abortion in some states that makes them eligible for the death penalty. What the hell?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's bad.
It's really awful. A second class citizen? Yeah. Chattel is more like it.
Chattel.
Welcome
to
the Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's disgusting. I was 17 when I had an abortion in Boise, Idaho. Had to go through picketers calling me every name in the book.
Oh.
And I was already traumatized because I, you know, loved my boyfriend, mm-hmm. and thought of the what ifs. And, you know, I take this path and I'm teen mom, and I take this path and I'm doing what I planned on doing, mm-hmm. which I ended up doing. But that, just that process of having to battle through, mm-hmm. The picketers and there's other details that I won't get into that were also pretty dehumanizing, but it wasn't fun. It was terrible. And you already feel crappy enough for just having to sort out that mess, but didn't have that sort of piled on top, the unpleasantries. And ironically, the person who impregnated me was the son of the state adjutant general, who became like super Republican anti-abortion.
Oh, geez.
Later on, and after my then boyfriend passed away years later, like maybe, mm-hmm. 10 years ago, I actually sent him a letter, told the father. It's like, yes, you know.
Oh, hello.
Yeah.
Good for you.
So you know, like, things could have been very different from, because they could have ended up ultimately raising the kid.
Sure.
Right.
You never know.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to do it. Sorry. I just knew where I was in life, and this person wasn't somebody I wanted to have a baby with.
Like, right.
You know, maybe
17.
I know, so young.
You don't want to have a baby with anybody when you're 17.
Right. I definitely didn't have that in the picture.
Right.
I was so shocked. And then that person ended up overdosing on drugs anyway.
Oh.
It's just like, I sort of saw some problems.
Well, and these people, the abolitionists, make no exceptions for rape.
Mm-mm.
Or incest.
No. Oh, no.
Or ectopic pregnancies.
No, because
so the life of the woman is irrelevant. That's, I think, to me, the most insulting, at best.
It's the worst.
Part of this is that the woman's life is inconsequential, mm-hmm. to the laws, to the anti-abortionists.
Well, you know, I read something. There's so many quips of stupid people saying stupid things about abortion. And one of them was, well, you know, that fetus might be president one day.
I think he was last time. Undeveloped.
My God, that was good. That was really good, Susan.
Ding, ding, ding.
He's a genius.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel really bad.
We could have avoided that.
For the young women that are coming through, you know, it must be horrifying to know that you have to fly somewhere from some states and they don't have money. And, you know, I don't know the details about the little girl that had to go across state lines to get an abortion.
Yeah.
She almost died.
Abortionfunds.org is always one place you can put your money if you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That
donate to Planned Parenthood and do it in the name of Mike Pence.
Yeah.
Good idea.
And
good
use all idea. His contact information, because yeah. otherwise you're going to get a million solicitations.
That's right.
Because I get them.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, so. I do too.
Well, so okay. what do you think as a, I don't know, a community of women, a country, what can we do? How do we circumvent this? How do we make our voices heard?
Well, vote for the people in the legislature who are going to support women's rights to choose, women's rights to have control of their bodies, period. Yep. There should be no laws about controlling our bodies.
Period.
None.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I don't understand about it is why haven't there been, or have I missed it, big demonstrations? And there have been some in the beginning, I think, when it first, I think we need to be in the streets yelling and screaming. It's.
Yeah. Yeah. And another thing that you asked earlier, you know, what do you think? I think it's going to definitely turn conservative female voters who stand behind, they actually don't mind abortion and they tolerate abortion or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're going to vote Democrat.
I hope
they're
so.
Not gonna
we could hope.
Yeah. I really believe they will. They're going to draw the line when it comes to these punitive measures that are accompanying this stuff. It has to be. It has to be. So I think we're going to see some interesting results at the polls. I do.
I think it's also a good idea to start registering young voters, young women.
Mobilize. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get
good.
Them. You know, there's all this voter suppression activity going on around the country. And the only way to overcome that is massive voter registration, massive voting. Let's get past the traditional 35% voter turnout. Let's go to 50%.
Mm-hmm. We need 90%.
Well, that would be great.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And then there's mail order things you can do. Mifepristone. You know, you can get some of that stuff prescribed.
Oh, you mean like for the day after the abortion pill?
Abortion pills.
Yeah, you can be 6 weeks along and get a prescription sent to you with some very detailed instructions. And okay, so another personal story. That was there. After being diagnosed with MS, discovered I was pregs, and my neurologist basically advised, this is not a good idea.
And for your body, right.
You will probably be in a wheelchair if you do this.
Oh.
So I didn't. Oh. So I did the mifepristone this time, second time. And I just want to say, if nobody's ever taken it, this is a really crazy thing, but it is just like being at full term and giving birth in terms of pain.
Wow. So you kind of go into labor.
You absolutely go into labor. Mm-hmm. It puts you into labor. And so it hurts. It's intense. Mm. And you don't have those same good pain drugs, you know, that you might have if you were in a hospital setting. So just know that, like, if you're considering that or something, it doesn't take as long. It's not hours and hours and hours, but it's a few hours of being at 9 centimeters about ready to push. Like, it's hardcore.
Wow.
10 is when you push, but 9 did is you the have hard, any, hurt part.
Did you have any after effects, or was it over when it was over?
It was over when it was over. It was like maybe some light spotting the next day and nothing gory. I mean, I was pretty early on in that first try, but it was painful. That's all I wanted just to say. Yeah, it's not like it just suddenly you have a gentle period. There's an event that takes place and it's contractions and all of it and done. Mm-hmm. But really, I mean, I was okay. Emotionally, I was okay. It was just,
well, that's
sure,
the
you're
thing
doing
about
the right
it, you know,
thing.
Yeah.
That's another thing. It's like the decision to have a baby, have an abortion, adopt any of that stuff is all very, in a way, painful. I mean, it's painful, not adoption so much, but that's a painful decision to have to make because you don't have your own child. So I'm also thinking about the pain that you go through when you're pregnant. And you think there's a baby in there. I could have a baby.
Yeah.
And that is a decision that no man can make.
No man ever has to make
no,
it. So they have no idea.
And you don't
no,
really,
don't.
You know,
I really don't.
When I was pregnant the second time, I knew the second I conceived. And I didn't the first time, but the second time I knew.
You tuned in.
I just tuned in. Mm-hmm. And I guess, I don't know, I wasn't intending to, but I knew that I was pregnant. And there was no consideration for abortion. I was married and a baby was great and I wanted to have the baby. But I had a friend at the time who was also pregnant and she was having an abortion.
Aha.
And she and I talked and talked and talked. And I'm telling you, it was really hard. And she sits there looking at me pregnant and happy.
Right.
And I'm trying to help her through an abortion when she has chosen not to have another child, which would have been her fifth.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And she said, I just can't, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess what I really cannot understand the lack of compassion from men. I don't get it.
Yeah.
And I'm not a man hater. I love men. But I don't understand these guys. Like, was it Louis Gohmert that said you can do a gynecological exam by having the woman swallow a camera? One of those Southern guys said that.
Someone did say that. A politician did.
And so they think that kind of stuff. How can they have any idea?
Those are men who look at women as objects or functions or interchangeable parts in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's infuriating. I mean, I'm chewing on the inside of my cheek right now to keep from screaming.
She is.
But it's, you know, it's the rooster, the cock at the top of the pecking system who doesn't have to be aware of anything below him because he's got it all.
Yeah.
And so maybe the question is, how do women make them feel it?
Yeah.
What can we do?
Well, you know, there's a movement about withholding sex.
But not every woman has
that choice. There's a whole lot of marital rape and other kinds of rape that's going on. Plus, you know, it might be something you like.
True.
There was some momentum in the news about male having, there's some, maybe it's like sterilization or temporary sterilization or more vasectomies or that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, I read that.
That, to me, is compelling.
Vasectomies are way up in numbers, according to the Urology Association.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah, just since that law came in Texas.
Awesome. Let's dig into that data for next time.
Let's reward those guys.
Definitely. And maybe there should be some public health, and especially in those states where abortion is punitive, make that an initiative to fund, like really promote that service and that avenue.
Well, yeah. And I guess another one of the things that really puzzles me about this whole thing is, why do we even have to talk about this now?
Yes.
Our planet is burning.
Word.
Why is this even an issue? Is this the Christian right? Is that what we're talking about here?
No, I think it's fundamentalism, including Christian right. Yeah. Other fundamentalist religions, though, I'm not sure they're as adamant as Christians, but fundamentalism is men controlling women.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a broad generalization. I could be all wet.
No,
I see a lot of procreation happening with these young ladies who were, you know, interns that I helped in the workforce, and then they went and got married, and a lot of them are cared for, and but they're just banging out the babies, and I'm going, oh my God, is that a good idea? I love you, and children are wonderful, and I have two grown children that are fantastic human beings. How much is enough? And
yeah, we are overpopulated. That's probably the biggest reason for our climate crisis.
It's just kind of cringy sometimes.
It is kind of cringy because but God love them. I mean, they're young and they have faith in the future and they want more babies.
There's optimism. You're right. Yes, you're right.
They're optimistic and, you know, but I see a mom with a baby and a sack on the front and a 2-year-old in the grocery cart and a 3- and a 4-year-old beside it. And she's pregnant. It's like, oh my God, you know, stop it.
It's like, I hope you can really afford to do this thing in a way. Good for you.
Well, you know, money is another issue. I mean, there's so much more to abortion and the decision in making it than these legislators have any idea about.
Well, yeah. They don't vote for child care. They don't vote for education.
Right.
They don't vote to support single mothers.
Right.
They just want
parental
to be sure
leave.
That...
Come
yeah.
on, where's
yeah,
that?
Yeah, right.
Where is that?
Every sperm is sacred. After that, you're on your own.
Oh, you know, another thing. Maybe I said this last week or last time, but one thing I've started saying, instead of if someone is a pro-life,
yes.
they're pro-birth.
Pro-birth.
They're pro-birth.
Yeah.
They don't want anything to do with the kid after it's born.
Exactly.
Right. But you got to have that baby.
They're not pro-children. They're not pro-family.
No, they're not pro-family. Mm-hmm. They're... Anyway, I'd be really interested if any of our listeners have any comments on that, too. You can reach us by email at the Klatch. What is it?
It's
the Klatch at
voiceofvashon.org.
Yeah, .org.
Boom.
So, I don't know. It's a really depressing subject.
It is.
It's infuriating.
It's infuriating. Mm-hmm. I want to see options for mm-hmm. the women of America.
Mm-hmm.
I see the walls closing in. I see it worse yes. than it was in the 60s, because now you're going to get arrested and thrown in jail and fined.
And your neighbors in Texas are going to be watching you.
Yeah, and their doctors.
You know, that's the worst. But that is a terrible part of it, is that I'll get $10,000 if you get an abortion and I hear about
bounty.
It.
Bounty.
It's bounty.
So weird.
Who's that bounty hunter? Dog, the bounty hunter.
Dog.
Yeah. We could have him, I guess. Well, I don't know that we're going to solve the problem. We never really can do that.
No, but this is so cathartic.
It is cathartic.
Yeah, I kind of got to talk it out.
Yeah, sometimes you do.
It's awful.
Yeah.
Okay, so we were going to close with laughter.
Well, we were going to close with laughter.
I don't watch dramas at night because I like to close my night every night with laughter.
That's mm-hmm. a great idea.
We watch mm-hmm. comedies. Or variety shows like Jimmy Kimmel or Jimmy Fallon that have lots of laughs.
You're the second person this week who has told me that.
It's so much better that way.
Yeah.
30 Rock on repeat. Bring it on.
I love 30 Rock.
That kind of really fast moving, really funny, really mm-hmm. light. No violence.
Clever.
No blood. Just
yeah.
wits.
Yeah.
And folly.
We like the clever.
Bring me folly. Yeah.
I've been doing a lot of BritBox because it's pretty benign.
It's pretty light.
You know,
yeah,
I like
Brit
it.
Boxes, yeah.
So, you know, I learned that in 1962, there was a laughter epidemic in Tanganyika. Seriously.
Where? Wait, what?
Tanganyika. Yeah.
Where that?
Tanganyika. Yeah. Africa.
Okay.
it was a contagious epidemic, and it wasn't even a joyful noise. It was somebody started laughing, and then somebody else started laughing, and somebody else started laughing. And it lasted a month, and it went from house to house. It was like a... Oops.
No.
No.
I thought it was the Queen's...
No, it wasn't the Queen's
gambit.
Cup. No, it wasn't the Queen's Cup. But it actually did happen. And it really doesn't tell us much about humor, except that it is contagious.
Well, what fascinated me about that particular article is that it was considered a disease caused by excess stress.
Okay.
The people who started it were under such stress, they couldn't control
their
laughter.
That's exactly where it is. And they're talking about, in the article, they were talking
Isn't
about
funny?
That. It's stress. You know, have you ever laughed at a funeral? You know, or yeah. I have. I mean, you get nervous and you sit in the church pew and all of a sudden everybody's laughing, you know. But another story I heard was that there was a DMV. I don't remember what state it was in, but there was a DMV and somebody wanted to go to work for the DMV. But they didn't want to go to work for that DMV because there was a particularly bad supervisor there that everybody laughed at all the time. And all the place did was laugh. And that person didn't want to work there because there was just too much laughter going on.
They didn't want to be a party to it. That's funny.
Right, right.
I have to tell a story about uncontrollable laughter.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, I did a 10-day meditation retreat where you sit quietly in a room and meditate all day long, off and on, and you do it sometimes in large groups. Well, in this one particular afternoon, we're all quietly meditating, very, very solemn, very quiet,
mm-hmm.
and somebody let a big fart.
I would be the 3-year-old laughing.
Yes.
Well, you
Me
can
too.
Hear the titters starting over by the farter, and the fartees were trying to breathe, and the laughter spread across the room totally out of control.
How funny. I'm sure.
Howling in the meditation room.
Well, that's a whole other subject, is why do farts make us laugh? And with that, I think we're at the end of our show. Thank you for joining us. It's been wonderful to have you here. And we'll look forward to seeing you in October.
Oh, my goodness.
Happy trails, everybody.